Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Hump Day edition of The Yard. Hope you are well wherever you are these days. And listen, we want to, guys, send our thoughts and prayers out to our friends out in California. It's an absolutely biblical type situation. It's happening out there. I tell you what's interesting. I'm not one to assign blame, but in situations like this, it's kind of hard not to. But our government has failed us, and I'm not going to politicize the issue, but I listened to a podcast, I don't know, 3-4 months ago about a guy that was kind of an expert, you know, in this sort of stuff. And this is long before the fires, and he talked about how the, you know, the wildfire situation in California has grown worse in the last several years, and some of that is because of a decision that we made on the federal level several years ago, maybe decades ago, that, you know, with all the runoff from the mountains and stuff at the Pacific Northwest, that all that stuff used to kind of feed the tributaries and eventually the lakes and all of California and kind of keep that area a little moister, I guess we can say, or more moist. Is moisture a word? I guess moisture is a word. I don't know if moisture is, but nevertheless, I digress. But for somehow, some way, we decided that rather than have that water flow down into California, that we just push it back out in the Pacific Ocean. Doesn't make a lot of sense. And some reports out there of the fire hydrants being empty, and you know, some people have to be held accountable for that, as well they should. A lot of you know, famous people that are losing their homes out there. I've seen a lot of things on Twitter about that. Not that their homes are any more valuable to them than they are to the common man and woman. But it is a tough scenario out there. And I can only begin to imagine how difficult that must be for those folks to, you know, to kind of see it coming and fear the worst and then experience the worst. And so, you know, we go through some traumatic situations here in our state from time to time. And it would be, I don't know, disrespectful, you know, to offer up a prayer or two for everybody involved out there. And I've read some reports, too, that there are people that have been arrested for looting evacuated homes. Guys, you really don't want me to spend a lot of time on that. I'm not going to. But these people are the bottom of the food chain. Now, I'm not one that believes in being very judgmental, but in a scenario like this, for you to go into someone else's home when they are evacuating under a government-mandated evacuation order, mind you, to flee potential death, and then you would go in their house and steal their television? Yeah, I mean, the penalties on the books are not serious enough, if you ask me. And so that's a big part of that deal, too. You know, that just, you know, we saw it in Katrina, you know, and I had some sense of sympathy for some of those people because many of those people, you know, for one reason or another, weren't able to evacuate. It's like, hey, we need food. Nothing's open. I get that aspect of it. I do. There's a survivalist component to that. But when it's the first night of this stuff and you're breaking into somebody's house and stealing their TV and their guns and things like that, that, you know, it's a completely different scenario, man. It is. And where are we as a society, man? It really breaks my heart sometimes to think about the world that my children are going to inherit from us. It truly does. I know many of you share the same concern. You know, our parents felt that way too. But, you know, I think us Generation Xers are in a position we could probably fix some of that. You know, it's true. We were the last latchkey kids. You know, as I see these reels out there and says, you know, we didn't fight on the internet. We fought in person, you know. Not that I'm one that would ever advocate violence, but I tell you this, people's attitudes were a whole lot better back then. Take that as you will, you know. A lot of people get keyboard courage, and then all of a sudden things turn real life. Things change. But there was a much healthier respect for people. I'm not going to tell you guys to get off my lawn, but I knew this. I know that you didn't run your mouth reckless in the 80s and 90s because somebody would shut it for you. True story. True story. All right, let's move on. Let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. Man, I love them. They love me. They love you. As I've shared many times, I think Brian and I were among the first, 500 customers to go in there. And I said then, this place is going to do well. They have done well. They've expanded their burger empire now to 3 locations. Of course, University Drive here in Star Vegas, that's a flagship. Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, and then Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Be sure and go by and check them out next time you're in town or on the way to town. And have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Always some new specials that pop up too. I like to try things out as a special to see how they go. Pretty special that you do that. But if you're looking for a lunch dinner or a work dinner, family dinner, there's so many things out there you can do with your entertainment and dining dollar. Let me encourage you, stop by and see the fine folks at Bulldog Burger Company. If you're a sports person, they always have games on the TVs there around the bar, so you can enjoy adult beverage and cheer for the Bulldogs, perhaps when they are on the road. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. Are we having fun? I'm having a blast with this Mississippi State men's basketball team. Bulldogs now 14-1, and we went to Vanderbilt and we gave them their first home loss of the year. Now, there was a time in this ball game it looked like we were about to absolutely do them in the way we did South Carolina. Give them some credit. They battled back, made a run, cut it down to about 5, I think. And then, lo and behold, the leadership of the Mississippi State team just kind of stepped up and said, okay, Vanderbilt, that's enough. That's enough. Cam Matthews with a big basket late. And then, of course, Claude O'Harris hits that three when we had to have it. Incredible, incredible, incredible game. And I enjoyed just about every minute of it. Like some of you, there were a few anxious moments there. I'm looking, can't let these guys hang around. And the next thing you know, it's tightened up on us a little bit. And, I really thought, again, Chris Jans is so good at the halftime adjustments. I always expect those first 6-7 minutes of that second half, to go our way. That's what I expect. But, kind of looking back first half here, guys, we're up 3 with 8 minutes to go in the half. And then, we began to kind of exert our influence a little bit. Really good on the glass. Defensive pressure was good. How many times you see us just go in there and rip a basketball away from somebody? We are relentless when we want to be. When we really make up our minds to play defense, you're not going to score. I mean, you want to. You do. And I understand that. But we have something to say about that as well. And, of course, you look up there at the break. It's 39-28. They hit a little jumper right before the buzzer to make it 39-28. So you're up 11 at the break and feeling good. You're on the road. They're going to make a run. Everybody does in the SEC. That's how life works at elite level basketball. But you start working through it. And, we just had some empty possessions. And I thought at times we got a little bit lackadaisical on defense. We push it back out to 18. Right under the 17-minute mark, and you feel like, okay, all right, okay, we're good. We're good here, Steve. We're good. I guess it was 48-29, and then they made a couple free throws. But, we got up by as many as 22 in this game, and you're thinking, we're just going to run away with this. We'll be able to empty the bench on the road in the SEC. 14-4 to go, and it's 54-32 in favor of your Bulldogs. And then from there, things got a little bit dicey. Really got a little bit dicey. And I thought there was a couple times there, and far be it for me to second guess Chris Jans, but there was a couple times there I thought maybe we should call a timeout and stop the run. I also understand the emotional lift that gives the other team. All of a sudden you're on the road, the crowd rises to their feet, everybody gets a little bit rejuvenated because you feed off that energy. But Chris let them kind of play through the adversity, and we turned out to be okay. Of course, there's some natural timeouts that are built in these ball games, but it's just amazing to see what Chris Jans has built in a short time here. So 5 minutes to go in the game. It's a 63-58 game after Tyler Nichols' three-pointer. It's a five-point game. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I thought everything was going to be okay because I worried. I was like, they have all the momentum right now, all of the juice, and we talked about the Claude O'Harris three-pointer. That's right at the four-minute mark. That made it 68-60. And I turned to the wife then. I said, that's your ball game right there. That's it. That's your ball game. And then we get loose. And I tell you this, it was such poetry in motion. And again, one of the things I love so much about this team is that we're a team. It doesn't matter who gets a basket. Doesn't matter who fills up the scoring column. We like making that extra pass. And so what do? We get the ball into Keyshawn Murphy. They double. And what does Keyshawn do? Rather than force up a bad shot, he makes the extra pass. And there is a streaking Cam Matthews that gets a wide open dunk to make it 70-68 with 2:07 to play. Guys, the game's over. It's over. When you play defense the way Mississippi State does and you shoot free throws the way we do, we've been better about that this year maybe compared to what we've been in recent years. The game was over. Now, give A.J. Hogard a lot of credit. He was kind of a one-man wrecking crew late, but they just weren't getting enough stops on defense. R.J. Melendez with a late layup there to push it back up to 10. Hogard, you know, misses the three. Keyshawn gets the rebound. It's just over a minute to play. It seems very academic. So, again, it's a 10-point game with 2 minutes to go, and then it's still a 10-point game just as we approach a minute to go. So you weren't able to make up any ground in that minute, and so you're in a situation now where you have to foul. Cam Matthews to the line knocks down a couple. You know, that's 12 points under a minute to play. And so eventually, you know, State does what good teams do, and Devin McLaughlin missed a three-pointer with 21 seconds to go. Cam Matthews gets a hand on that thing. You know, you know what's coming there. And Cam Matthews gets up and just blocks a shot. We get the rebound, and essentially just run out the game. Good win for Mississippi State. Anytime that you can, you know, put on a dark color jersey and go on the road and come home with a dub, that is a great turn of events no matter who you're playing. And I think in the end, we're going to look back at this and we're going to say, you know what, that was a big win for us because now we become really big Vanderbilt fans. They've been playing well, but now it's like, hey, we need Vanderbilt to go run some interference, not just to help us in the net, but to help us a little bit in the standings. Vanderbilt's got some pieces. I think you guys saw that. They do. They have some pieces. And probably a little bit better than they have been. You know, watching them against LSU, I wasn't overly impressed. Watching them last night, I thought that they were a much better team. Granted, they were at home. I didn't watch all that Vanderbilt-LSU ball game, but there were some times that, you know, got a little bit herky-jerky. I thought the team played with a lot of character, the Vanderbilt team. And, of course, not as much character as Mississippi State. But there's something to be said in the second half being down 22 and cutting it to 5 points. Says a lot about the leadership of that team and the coaching of that team. So now, again, we're big fans of them and want them to do well. You know, State, you know, up a point again in the net. What are we at, 12? You know, looking at last night, too, R.J. Melendez, and again, it's what I love about the team. You know, how many times last year, if Josh Hubbard had a bad game, we were done. And now you look at this, and we can win games on the road in a Southeastern Conference by double digits, and Josh not even score in double digits. That says a lot about the job that this team has done in the offseason, in the portal to bring in pieces to work around here. So we're not so reliant on one shooter. R.J. Melendez, 19 points. Impressive night for him. We talk about his defense. In some game, that's what it's going to be about. Defense, rebounding, kind of making other people look better. 8 of 14 from the floor. Banged down a three and also got 7 rebounds and a block and a couple of steals. Just doing a little bit of everything. We mentioned Cam Matthews, who is the glue, right? He is the glue guy. Cam Matthews gets in a little bit of foul trouble here, and that's another thing, too. Last year, if Cam got in foul trouble in the first half, it was going to be tough. Cam's doing a better job, you know, playing defense without fouling. He does get 4 fouls last night, but 16 points go along with 5 rebounds. Of course, that big had 3 blocks last night, a steal, handed out a couple of assists, 3 assists. Claudio Harris with 13, and you're like, Steve, we had all these double-digit scores and no Josh Hubbard. That's right. Josh was 3 of 9. For 9 points, 1 of 5 from beyond the arc, and even missed back-to-back free throw. That never happens, you know. Handed out 5 assists, and again, 0 turnovers. Michael Nwoka, I thought, did some good things for us inside there. Again, he's never going to be your leading scorer, I don't think. You know, but 18 minutes of action for him, puts down 8 points. Did get a little foul trouble, pulled down 5 rebounds, also had a block. Sean Jones Jr. at times is kind of an unheralded hero on this team, not just because of his effort on the defensive end, but he's not a guy maybe you run a lot of offense through, but he's very opportunistic. When he gets the opportunity, he takes them. I think this is a guy that clearly understands his role on the team. 7 points last night off the bench in 21 minutes of action. And, did some good things in the free throw line too, 4-4. Keyshawn Murphy, we talked about him dishing out that great assist there on the heave. Just 4 points last night. Pulled down 6 rebounds. But how great is it, again, you get Hubbard and Murphy in single digits and you win a game by 10 or more on the road in the SEC. As good as that win was over South Carolina, I like this one even better. You expect to protect your home court. But to go on the road again and play a team, it was top 30 RPI at the time or in the net at the time, that's big. It's big. It certainly is. And so it's a lot to be excited about. State shoots 43% from the floor, 37.5% from beyond the arc, and then 84% free throw, 16 of 19. And again, two of those three misses, Josh Hubbard. You never expect that. But great job by the team there. And you look at the Vanderbilt side of things. We talked about A.J. Hoggard. 18 points for him, and it felt like all of them came in the last 10 minutes. Great effort from him. Tip of the cap, for sure. No doubt about it. As a team, they shot 35% and then 19.2% from beyond the arc. Perimeter defense, a Chris Jans staple, and then 75% from the free throw line. But, this is a quality win. And you say, well, yeah, Steve, it's Vanderbilt. Hey, they're 13-2 and one.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
One in the SEC. And speaking of SEC play, kind of a wild night. Did you see what happened with Florida and Tennessee? And Florida's good. Of course, there's a lot of things going on down there in Gainesville. But Tennessee held to 15 points in the first half as the number one team in the country. And they get beat by 30. 30. 73-43. You're not going to see a Rick Barnes team come out and play as poorly as that one did. I mean, it was absolutely a crushing defeat. And then Auburn goes on the road. Big, big win for them. Even though they're ranked as the number two team in the country, they go to Texas and they survive a late run from the Longhorns. They get outscored by 7 in the second half, but they hold on to win 87-82. This is a Texas team now. It's 11-4 and 0-2 in the SEC. They're probably at best, top 6 or 7 in this conference, but certainly in the middle half there. And that's going to be, a big thing kind of moving forward. I mean, Texas is going to be Texas. But, Arthur Kaluma with 34 points in that game. And then you lose. Kentucky. Dare I say it? We're going to preview it on Friday's show. Kentucky going on a road to play Georgia. They get beat 82-69. Georgia really all over them in the first half and just kind of cruised and traded baskets there in the second half to win. Great win for Georgia. An unranked Georgia team hosts Kentucky, and Kentucky felt so great after beating Florida in Rupp, and they go on the road and they get spanked. And again, it's tough to win on the road in the SEC, but you know, to go out and play as poorly as they did defensively in that first half, it kind of says that there may be a fatal flaw with this Kentucky team. Missouri takes care of LSU, 83-67. LSU 11-4 and 0-2 in the SEC. And, you know, you've played Vandy and Missouri. Good teams, not great teams. And I go back to, I remember some people were forecasting Matt McMahon to be our coach even after we were no longer talking to him. We were finalizing a deal with Chris Jans. We got the better coach. Now, I understand the things at LSU were pretty rough, right? I mean, you had all those guys go get in the portal, and you had the NCAA investigation hanging over your head. I get it. But I think it's safe to say, you know, you can rebuild a basketball roster within a year or two, and now certainly in year three, you should have all of your guys in. I mean, you can turn the roster over in a year or two. And, of course, LSU helped that out because most of their players left. And then year one, the guys you're going to get are guys that really just want to play in the SEC and really don't have another opportunity somewhere. But 3 years in, this roster should be better. It's not. Look at what Chris Jans has done compared to Matt McMahon. It's crazy. Now, looking ahead to tonight, for those of you, because you know how it is when we're winning, it's like every game matters, right? You want to do your advanced scouting yourself to kind of look at the teams that we're going to play. So Alabama, number five Alabama, who's 12-2 in the league, 12-2 overall, 1-0 in the league, will travel South Carolina. 10-4, of course, they got absolutely destroyed by Mississippi State here in Starkville. Alabama, about a dozen-point favorite in that game. Ole Miss will travel to Arkansas. Ole Miss ranked 23. And many of you astute basketball observers said before the season even started, we should be ranked top 25. Ole Miss should not be. And some of that's a little bit homeristic. But many of you, and not just because you're Ole Miss haters, but it's because you're really followers of college basketball, felt this Ole Miss team wasn't very good. I think they're good. But we're going to find out a little bit about them tonight as they play in Bud Walton Arena, one of the more difficult venues to play in the Southeastern Conference, if not the country. Arkansas 0-1 in the league and 11-3 overall. So it's not maybe one of Arkansas's best teams, but, you know, Musselman and those guys do a great job there. Will be awfully interesting. Arkansas is actually a slight favorite. I think a lot of that's because it's a toss-up game and you're at home. Texas A&M, number 10 Texas A&M, will travel to number 17 Oklahoma for a game tonight. That's going to be 8 p.m. You can watch basketball basically all evening long. Get off work, go home, grab a cold one, put on the Alabama-South Carolina game, flip back and forth between that and the Ole Miss and Arkansas game, and then watch A&M and Oklahoma play in the nightcap. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. Oklahoma, a slight favorite there too. Alabama, the only road favorite of your three games tonight. So very interesting as we kind of begin to look at all that stuff. But, again, we'll get a better grip on things a couple weeks into this thing. But let's just enjoy the ride, guys. You know what I'm saying? It's like I see people already beginning to worry about Chris Jans leaving and worrying about what's going to happen when we go to Auburn and all that kind of stuff. Guys, let's just enjoy the ride. Right now, your Bulldogs are tied with Auburn for first place in the SEC. That's two games in. But you know what? First place is first place. We have the same record. We've won 8 in a row. They've won 7 in a row. They pick up a road win at Texas. We pick up one at Vanderbilt. Looking at the bottom of that, LSU 0-2 and Texas 0-2. Everybody else is, you know, 1-1 or have only played one game so far. So, again, things will kind of come into focus here. But let's not get too far down the road and not enjoy the present. It's so easy to do that. And Mississippi State fans, maybe it's all those years of us being bad in football. And like, well, all we had to look forward to was the Egg Bowl. It's like, I know we're going to be terrible this year. I just want the egg back. You know, and I would hope to think that we have graduated beyond that. But you see it all the time, and I don't know if it's as prevalent in other fan bases as it is in ours. It's like we constantly want to forecast failure. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, we beat South Carolina and Vanderbilt, but things are about to get a lot tougher. No joke. We got Kentucky coming in here. Can we beat Kentucky? Yes. Can we beat Kentucky and the refs? We'll see. I think the fact that this game is in Starkville instead of in Lexington probably helps. It's just human nature. You know, officials get on the roll with the crowd too. They do, and I don't care who you are, where you're from. There are guys out there, when a team gets on a roll, the official gets on a roll with them. It's just true. The crowd, nobody wants to be that guy, right? All of a sudden, it's a big play, and a guy lays it up and in, and you're going to call the charge. It takes a lot of guts, a lot of character to do that. It really does. And that's what they're paid to do, but there's still the human element in all this stuff. It's important to understand that. And again, we'll look ahead to Kentucky some on Friday. But, again, you start thinking, okay, yeah, the first two games, they're not nearly as difficult as the next two. Doesn't mean we can't win them. It's going to be tough going to Auburn, but if you can find a way to split these next two against top 10 opponents, Kentucky and Auburn, and then all of a sudden you get Ole Miss coming in here, an overrated Ole Miss team. Then you go to Tennessee, that's going to be tough. Then you got to go to South Carolina, but you start working through here and you kind of look at the second half of the schedule and you feel a little better about life. So if we got a decent schedule this year. I mean, how many times under the Chris Jans administration have we kind of gotten jacked those first 2 weeks of the season on the SEC schedule? This year we don't. You know, we got a little rough stretch coming up. But once we get through that, you know, the second half of the season, I think, opens up pretty well for us. And so I encourage you, if you get out, come out. And one more thing I want to say, too. I saw some people complaining about this in the Facebook groups and on Twitter. Mississippi State does not control the prices of the tickets on StubHub. State has nothing to do with pricing on third-party ticket vendors. If you buy your tickets direct from Mississippi State, you're going to get them at face value and maybe a small processing fee, and I mean just a couple bucks. If you wait to buy your tickets later, now, hey, I want to go see State play Kentucky. There are no tickets available to Mississippi State. And we have tweeted out as a university, and we in the media have shared these tweets from time to time. When there gets to be a low ticket alert, we send you to retweet. That's when you buy your tickets directly from HellState.com or call the ticket office and you get them at face value. If you wait until it's sold out to start looking for tickets, you are going to pay extremely expensive prices, especially the way the team is playing and you've got a top 10 opponent like Kentucky. They're going to bring some fans too. And so I'm not blaming you. I'm just trying to do my best to educate you a little bit. I read a Facebook post yesterday or day before that somebody wanted to bring their kids to see State play Kentucky, and it's going to be like $200 per for those tickets. Now, I don't know how accurate that is. I haven't looked. But maybe this isn't the game to bring the kids to. Right? And if it was the game to bring the kids to, we should have planned ahead. But now that we've waited and the exuberance of the season has kind of caught us, you're like, Daddy, I want to go watch him play. Taking them to a Kentucky game, but you got to pay $200 a seat, is probably not the way to go, right? Like, oh, you know, guys, you know, the common family can't come to a game now. Well, yes, you can. You just got to plan ahead. And I'm not being critical. I'm just trying to explain how life works here. And I'm not trying to talk down to you. But when you look ahead at the schedule and you begin to think about these weekend games, guys, it's going to be tough to get tickets. And so I'll give you a good example. February the 15th, we're at Ole Miss, right? And so if you can stand it, we'd love to have you go to that game. We would. Now, Tuesday, February 11th, we got Florida coming in here. And you're like, well, Steve, it's a school night. Okay, I get it. But you need to understand that these weekend games are going to be tough tickets. And the more that we win, the more expensive those tickets are going to get on the third-party market. So what I would propose is look ahead at one of these Saturday games You know, if you don't want to do it on a school night, and maybe you say, Steve, I got to get up at 7 a.m. and go to work. I just can't do it. But look at one of these weekend games that we're home, and there's not a lot of them, to be honest with you. A lot of these Saturday games are going to be on the road. But February the 1st, that's a Saturday. It's a noon game. Missouri is coming here. Go ahead and buy tickets now. If you think you might want to go, buy tickets now. Don't wait until the Tuesday of the game week and like, hey, Steve, I really wanted to go to this Missouri game, but now tickets are $150 a piece. Buy your tickets now, and you can get them at face value. But the last thing we need to do is go get on social media and blast our administration for the ticket prices on StubHub. It just didn't make any sense. Zach Selman has nothing to do with that. Brandon Langua has nothing to do with that. Dr. Keenum, Chris Jans, nobody on campus has anything to do with that. And there's nothing that they can do to fix it. You know, we put X number of thousand tickets on sale. Once they're exhausted, they're gone. And then they're in the hands of the ticket buyer. And if they elect to take those tickets and then sell them on a third-party market, they do. And there's some people out there that buy up a bunch of tickets expecting the prices to go up, and then they'll sell them at over face value. I don't like it either, but that's just how things work. So plan ahead. Don't blame your administration when you don't. I just think it's important to kind of understand that I love each and every one of you, but let's not do it to ourselves. For today's top 10 list is always brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. 24 years of experience, back-to-back top 1% close ratios in the country, thus the name Close with Blair. Whether you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, look no further than Blair Chandler, who is one of us. He's a Bulldog through and through, has a season ticket holding opportunity in every sport, has a place here in town. He rides the wave of emotion just like you and I do. I like keeping business in the family whenever we can. Give him a call or text today at 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. It's one of those things in life they don't tell you about when you're a young person, but you need a trusted and experienced mortgage loan originator because you never know when life's going to throw you a curveball. And rather than throw your money away renting, making somebody else rich, you can buy a home, build an equity, and perhaps have something to leave your kids someday. Blair Chandler at closeatblair.com. All right. We touched on some songs that are turning 25 on the Monday show. Had somebody hit me up and said, Steve, it's been 40 years since 85. What a great year that was in rock and roll. How about 40 years? Songs that are turning 40 this year. Well, I got you. It's right in my wheelhouse, you know. I remember 1985, as do many of you, as we're all getting excited about life, getting excited about puberty, discovering the fairer sex. Many of you were chasing the prep girls. I was chasing the girls in the smoking section. Different dynamic, for sure. We all had the same goal. We just had a different methodology. But here we go. Great year in music. We're going to knock it out today. Top 10 songs turning 40. Craziness. All right, number 10, a song that got new life with Jake Mangum. And many of you maybe don't know this story. I interviewed Jake. I was the first to do a feature on Jake Mangum when he arrived at Mississippi State. After Jake got the big hit against Vanderbilt as a freshman that opened the floodgates for us to win that game and ultimately the series, I requested him in media, interviewed him the next week. He was nervous. He's not so nervous these days. That's back before you even knew who Jake Mangum was. At that point, he was John Mangum's kid. He wasn't Jake yet. But Jake, one of his best friends, a guy named Trace Levertich from Jackson Prep, and his walkout song at Prep was Your Love by The Outfield. And so when Jake came to Mississippi State, his good buddy said, hey, if you're changing your walk up, why don't you use mine? And so Jake did it as a tribute to his friend, and it became a part of Mississippi State baseball history. So number 10 is The Outfield, Your Love. And the name of that album is Play Deep. Number 9, a song that means an awful lot to me, from an album that means an awful lot to me. I knew about John Cougar and Johnny Cougar, and then he became John Cougar Mellencamp, and he released this album called Scarecrow. And of course, John Cougar Mellencamp, a big part of Farm Aid. And you know that my family, you know, we were a farming family. My dad lived on Augusta Road outside of Ellisville, and they were dairy farmers and farmed the land and all kind of stuff of that nature. And there's a line in this song. I could have gone a lot of different directions. There's a lot of hits on this album, but it's Rain on a Scarecrow. And there's a line in that song that always gets to me. Even when I listen to it now, all these years later, 40 years later, I can listen to this, and it reminds me of my heritage. And it's a line where he says, I think about my grandpa, my neighbors, and my name. Sometimes I feel like dying like this scarecrow in the rain. And I do. I think about how proud I am to be from the family from whence I've come, that Otis Robertson, you know, began the family business, you know, ended up having 13 kids. My dad was one of them. And of course, my dad went to work after he got his degree at Mississippi State, working for Farmers Home Administration, trying to make life better for Mississippi farmers. And so I don't say it enough here, but to all of you farming families out there that clothe us and feed us, thank you. You do a thankless job. And we often take you for granted. And you guys work so hard and you worry so much. And I know from all those years of, you know, of my dad sharing his work with all of us, that you know, you guys have to worry about the rain, you have to worry about the weather, and we take so much of that worry for granted. So on behalf of, at times, a very ungrateful nation, I want to say thank you to America's farmers, and specifically our Mississippi farming families. Number 8, kind of changing gears a little bit, it's the sophomore offering from Anthrax, Spreading the Disease, the first album with Joey Belladonna on vocals. And really kind of began to legitimize Anthrax. You know, Anthrax was a little bit sillier, obviously, than Slayer and Megadeth and Metallica. They weren't nearly as serious. They were serious musicians, but there was a sophomore quality to what they did. And we're going to go with Madhouse today, number 8, from Anthrax, number 8. Number 7, I probably should have bumped this one up a couple of spots. For many people, kind of their gateway album into the cult was Electric. You know, you started seeing Love Removal Machine and Wildflower on MTV when it got into heavy rotation. Well, before that, back when we used to have 120 minutes, they'd play the alternative stuff. The cult was already a bit of a underground phenomenon. And I would venture to say the best album in the catalog is probably the one that is now 40 years of age. It's the album Love, and my favorite track on that album is She Sells Sanctuary. Named my youngest son after Ian Asbury, the singer from the cult. Wish I could sing like him, for sure. All right, number 6, a song that kind of got reintroduced to Mississippi State this year. I remember, and when we first got MTV, like, somebody, this video played like twice an hour, and it was phenomenal. At the time, because all of a sudden you had these animation type figures that were like designed specifically for the song. And it's Money for Nothing from Dire Straits. Of course, there's also a little bit of a slur in this. And I had to kind of caution some people about that. We had somebody using this as their walk-up song a few years back at Duty Noble, and they did not bleep out the offensive word. And I had to kind of alert some people. I said, hey, you know, every time we play that song, you guys are playing this part. Like, oh, I never realized. Well, that's, you know, that's what we old guys are for, you know, for sure. But, yeah, it's Dire Straits, Money for Nothing at number 6. Number 5, a really good album that I don't know that gets enough respect, even among Kiss fans. We're talking Asylum from Kiss. And MTV was good for Kiss. Like, they had a resurgence in the 80s, and then, of course, you know, they had Hot in the Shade was a phenomenal album. They went out with Slaughter, and it was a really, really good time to be a fan of rock music. Of course, Ace Frehley was my guy in the 70s. Like, everybody had a favorite member of Kiss. Space Ace was my guy. I got a chance to see him with Alice Cooper in Tupelo a few years back. After he played the Shock Me solo, he handed me the guitar pick. I was wearing my Ace Frehley shirt. I still wear it from time to time. But Kiss for a while, kind of lost their way a bit. And I think Asylum and certainly Animal Eyes kind of put them back on track. And then, of course, as MTV became a thing, Kiss became a thing again. And so that was good to see because they're so theatrical. But we're going to go with Tears Are Falling from Kiss at number five. Number four, one of my favorite albums from the era. I love the band Dokken. Love the Beast from the East live album. Back for the Attack is probably my favorite Dokken album. And of course, there's some old heads that'll say, Steve, but no, it's got to be Under Lock and Key or it's got to be Tooth and Nail. I love them both. The production value on Tooth and Nail was not good. I wish they would remaster that. But Under Lock and Key was great. Great. And it was so MTV friendly. And you could hear it at times on the radio. Back for the Attack, I thought they got a little more of an edge. I love that album from start to finish. I absolutely love it. But my number two favorite Dokken album of all time is Under Lock and Key. And my favorite track on that album is not It's Not Love, and it's not In My Dreams, even though I love them. My favorite track on that album is Unchain the Night. I think the guitar and the vocal on this are just absolutely perfect. Number three, I'm going to talk about a couple of young ladies that we all had huge crushes on. They were incredibly beautiful and incredibly talented. And there were a lot of female artists in the 80s that were all image and no substance. And a lot of those were kind of corporate creations. It's like, hey, well, she's really hot, so guys are going to watch it. Let's see if we can't teach them to sing. Not the case here, not with Heart. Of course, their self-titled album, again, was kind of a return to form. Nancy Wilson, the fuel for many a young man's dreams, for sure. Loved this album, loved Bad Animals as well. And I think, too, when you think about the authenticity and the genuine nature of Anne and Nancy Wilson, they were the real deal and remain the real deal, of course. But they were kind of carefully packaged, you know, for the 80s. Everybody kind of had to be. But one of my favorite tracks in the catalog that maybe doesn't get the notoriety that Barracuda and some others do, it's Never from Heart. That's your number three track today. Number two, couldn't do 85 without talking about Motley Crue. A lot of you thought maybe this is going to be number one. It's not. Theater of Pain was a good album. It was not a great album. Matter of fact, of the famous four, right? Too Fast, Shout, Theater of Pain, Dr. Feelgood. This is my least favorite of the four. There's just not as much substance to this album. I loved it at the time, but it just haven't held up. But it delivered with this great classic song that a lot of people know well. It's Home Sweet Home from Motley Crue. Not what you were expecting at the time, but people forget. You know, we got our news then from Hit Parader and Circus Magazine, Rip Magazine. Wish I still made those. I follow Rip Magazine on Twitter, and they'll post some old covers every now and again. But you know, Vince Neil, of course, if you've seen The Dirt, and you should if you haven't, and it's very entertaining. Again, it's a little bit crude at times. But it's a great story. Pretty close to the truth. You know, Jeff Tremaine and those guys from the Johnny Knoxville series, they were kind of responsible for the movie. But so it's a little silly at times. But so is Motley. But Vince, of course, had the wreck that killed Razzle Dingley, the drummer from Hanoi Rocks. And he was facing major time, because not only did his friend die, but the car that he hit, those people were disabled, I guess, for the rest of their lives. And Vince was drinking and driving in Redondo Beach, California. And we didn't even know if there was going to be a Motley Crue, period. We didn't know. I mean, Shout the Devil came out, and Motley was like near the top, right? They had gone out with Ozzy, and, you know, were becoming like America's next great rock band. And then next thing you know, Vince gets in the accident. It's his own fault, drinking and driving. No way we're going to defend that. But we weren't even sure that Vince was going to be around. We thought Vince was going to go to prison. Of course, there were a lot of people that stand to gain a lot of money from Vince Neil. And so they basically found a way for him to kind of pay his way out of this thing. And then we got Theater of Pain. And it was a little bit disjointed. It really was. Man, you go back and listen to like Louder Than Hell and We Need a Lover Tonight. That's good stuff. But some of that stuff, you can tell, it was just kind of like the record company was overexposed due to the advance that they had on this record, and they had to put something out there. And I just don't think it's held up as well as some of the others. I guess the Famous Five, because Girls, Girls, Girls is in there too. Yeah, that's kind of when they found their groove again. Number one, though, for me, I think the best rock album and one of the best albums from 1985 was Rat's Invasion of Your Privacy. Love the cover. In addition to that, this is one of those albums from start to finish, there are no skips. And so when Motley was kind of figuring some stuff out, Rat kind of rose to prominence. And I don't know that Rat gets enough credit. Everybody knows Round and Round, right? And I guarantee you today, if you walked up to even three or four people from my generation and say, hey, name five Rat songs, they couldn't give them to you. Now, you could spell them out for them, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, I remember that one. But guys, Lay It Down is one of those songs that really shows who Warren DeMartini is and was. And I think Stephen Piercy's vocal in this album was great. Of course, by the time we got the Detonator, Stephen's voice was kind of ratted out a little bit, pardon the pun. But I think Rat was at their best on Invasion of Your Privacy. I like Dance Under Cover a lot, and I love Reach for the Sky. I really do. But I think Invasion, and because I think rock music needed Rat. Because of Motley's issues, and of course Ozzy had some contractual things going on, and you're still trying to figure out, you know, Jakey Lee and all that kind of stuff. It's a different deal. And so Rat kind of blew up. And on this Invasion of Your Privacy tour, they took Bon Jovi out. And Bon Jovi, of course, was supporting the 7800 Degrees Fahrenheit album just before Bon Jovi released Slippery When Wet. It really was one of the best rock albums of all time, and certainly the best-selling rock album of all time. And so when Motley came back, you know, of course, there was a lot more competition. But Rat came along at a very important time. Out of the Cellar was an album that everybody had, and they were eagerly anticipating the follow-up. And it was really the second full-length LP. You know, Rat had the five-song EP, and then some of that, like Back for More, was on the Rat self-titled EP and on Out of the Cellar. And you may not know this, but Tawny Kitaen from Whitesnake fame was dating Robin Crosby at the time. It's her leg on the EP, and it's her in the picture of the Out of the Cellar album. If you didn't know that, it's true. But when Invasion came out, it came out at a good time, and it kind of scratched us where we itch. So go out and jam some Rat. Love Rat, as well you should. A couple honorable mentions I want to throw out today, too, that maybe weren't rocky enough to make our countdown. It's Don't You Forget About Me from Simple Minds, more of a pop song. And then Addicted to Love from Robert Palmer. Those were also big songs. And David Lee Roth had the EP, you know, from Crazy from the Heat with California Girls. That's a cover, you know, my policy about that. But Dave's Crazy from the Heat EP was great. And then we could not wait for Eat 'Em and Smile to come out. Of course, that introduced us to Steve Vai. So I could talk about this stuff all day, but I won't. Bet your top 10 list. Reach out to us. Let us know if you have ideas for the top 10 list. Best way to do that is to hit up Roy on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. And you can get our great list on Spotify under the same handle. And thanks, as always, for your support of the top 10 list. Next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart. I love going in there. I wish I had more money because I would buy one of everything for all of you. You need new Mississippi State merchandise, so don't depend on your good friend and host to hit the lottery to make sure you get some new gear. Take care of that yourself. You'll be glad you did. And let's be honest about it. Maybe you can't admit it out loud, but you know what? There's some people out there to let you down on the Christmas gifts, and that's not why you get them, right? It's happy to be, you're happy to be remembered and people would be thoughtful. However, maybe you didn't get that quarter zip that you wanted. Maybe you didn't get that Mississippi State men's basketball shirt or that hoodie. Take care of it yourself. Okay, let's don't cry about it. Let's just get it fixed. Visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a Lawyer Boneyard listener, you get a phrase that pays, and that is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely complete. And just to kind of make yourself feel better, I've probably ordered more clothes since Christmas than I got for Christmas, right? It's just, you know, it's how it is. I take advantage of those sales right at the end of the year. Yeah, I do. Don't be afraid to spoil yourself a little bit. It's okay. All right, yesterday Mississippi State got another portal commitment with the commitment of former Eastern Michigan wide receiver Marcus Allen. Not a big surprise there, but I'll be honest with you. With so many receivers on the board, I wasn't exactly sure how the numbers were going to fall with him. But a guy that's had some production. Now, he was a very highly coveted receiver out of high school. Extremely highly coveted receiver out of high school. And committed to Michigan and Jim Harbaugh. Flipped to Wisconsin because Wisconsin just simply out-recruited Michigan for him. He even said in an article, he said, you know what, I just felt more love from Wisconsin. He was a guy that's a native of Dayton, Ohio. He's not that far from home. He grew up on Big Ten football. He's like, I'm just going to go there. Freshman year back in 2021, caught a few passes. Yeah, caught 365, but took the redshirt year. In 2022, they made the coaching change. Paul Chris got fired at Wisconsin. The whole staff gets removed. Marcus is thinking, you know what, I'm going to get out of here. I mean, I didn't come here to Wisconsin because it was my lifelong dream to be a Badger. I came here because of his coaching staff, so now that's changed. I'm going to go get in the portal. Luke Fickell and his staff get up there. They convince him to stay. He stays on. Limited role, 7 catches, 91 yards, a touchdown. And then he got a little bit of some trouble. Nothing major. He was at a block party. Had a weapon in his backpack that wasn't registered and proved to be stolen, not by him, by somebody else. Went through pretrial diversion, not a big deal. Nobody has the market on kids doing silly stuff. Went to Butler Community College and really got it going there. Mississippi State actually recruited him out of Butler. And he ultimately elected to go to Eastern Michigan and get closer to home, closer to family. And then last year, a breakout year for him. 43 catches, 651 yards, 3 touchdowns, a long of 78. We talk about, you know, we need some bigger receivers. 6'2", 212 pounds. About like the same size as me. But we'd like to get some guys a little bit bigger with some catch radius, right? But, you need physical guys out there on the perimeter. I love this guy's story, and you can read it for free. It's on all of my socials, of course, on jeanspage.com. You just can pull up his profile if you can't find it. Or just Google, you know, find me on Twitter or Facebook, and it's there. But this is a young man that has had some adversity in life. Thankfully, he had 2 adults in his life that were also very instrumental in making sure that he made good decisions. And he's ready to kind of reward them. You know, he's had the good year. He wants a chance to go play on the biggest stage. And so he's headed to the SEC. And I think that you guys are going to really like him. One of the things that I have been impressed about with this group, I've interviewed, we got 21 commitments. I've interviewed 20 of the 21 from the portal. Hadn't been able to get Jerron Glover yet, despite our best efforts. But so many guys that, number one, know how to communicate, but you can tell they have a reason for playing, and it's not just the love of the game. It's interesting to me. Very interesting to me. You know, and guys that can really communicate, guys that have a level of maturity. It's one, like when you're interviewing high school kids, you know, they don't have any experience. They don't really know what life is about. But when you interview guys, it's a business decision in many respects. Like, they're not going to come here and just be blown away by the facilities because many of them have already had that. You guys coming up from the FCS or, you know, G5, they're impressed by facilities because it's unlike anything they've seen before. These high school kids that are recruited by us in Alabama and LSU, they kind of see the same things. But these guys are coming to Mississippi State. They see it as a chance to play in the SEC. And Marcus Allen said something I thought was very, very interesting. He said, I kind of like the fact that State went 2-10 last year. He said, because of the fact I've seen how Coach Jeff Labby has handled all the negatives, and I want to go in there and help him turn this thing around. You need people like that. You know, it reminds me a little bit, like my own son was going to get ready to play college JUCO baseball. He had an opportunity to go to several JUCOs, and he chose Kahoma. I would not have chosen Kahoma. He did. And he goes, you know, Dad, if I go in there and we win and win big, it's going to be a much bigger deal. It's going to be a much bigger deal. Yeah, I could go to one of these other programs. I'd be just another guy there. But if I go there and we win, it's going to be a bigger deal. And I see some of that in Marcus too. It's like, hey, I want to go there and help Coach Lebby kind of right the ship. And you begin to think about what would our feelings be. Like, we went 2-10 this year. If we go 6-6 or 7-5 next year, and Marcus Allen and Cam Thompson and Dwight Lewis and these guys are instrumental in the comeback, they're going to hold a place in your heart forever. Because they came in here and helped us. They chose us and then came in here to be a part of the turnaround. It's very significant. So 21 transfers now. We've had two visitors leave today. We had stories up before everybody else. And Zach Chrysler, of course, a guy by way of Capaya Academy from Crystal Springs. And he's got a visit to Pitt that he's going to take. And then Devontae Miles. When I first mentioned him as a possibility, people were like, I don't know why we're taking this guy. And his next visit is to South Carolina. And then George has been in contact about potentially setting up a visit. I don't really get it either, to be honest with you. Looking at the production, and you look at the size and the girth, he probably is a true three tech when you look at build and measurables and things like that. But the production hadn't been there. But now he's got multiple SEC schools chasing him. So it kind of validates our evaluation that, hey, we bring him in, and now all of a sudden South Carolina's going to bring him in, and now Georgia's interested in bringing him in. So to me, it tells me that our staff is identifying players in the portal, and for some of these guys anyway, as they're ascending. We're not playing follow the leader. And so how does it sit today? Well, Aiden Williams visiting tomorrow. Got a visitor on campus today too, Anthony. I almost said Anthony Edwards because you know the actor, Anthony Edwards. I know that's not correct. I know that's not correct, but maybe we should go watch that. Maybe we should. Maybe you should. I don't know. I don't know what your plans are for the day, but maybe it is. But, yeah, man, it's exciting to think about, you know, getting some guys in here like Anthony Evans. Now, Anthony's guys were banged up last year, had a hamstring injury. He is a punt returner slash receiver, kick returner, do a little bit of everything. And obviously a little behind some guys on the depth chart at Georgia, enters the portal. We have some relationships with him. He is from Texas. Your head coach, Jeff Lebby, also from Texas. And so we have some connections out there. And, of course, this is a guy, too, that was recruited by some of our staff when they were in Alabama. And so we've got him in on a visit, and then we'll see what happens. You know, that's the important part of this. You got to get him on campus. You know, I mean, Brennan Thompson committed to state without taking his visit just because he wanted to be reunited with Jeff Lebby. But a lot of these guys are going to have to come in here and just kind of see what it's all about. And so you got to get him here, and all of a sudden they come and they see Mississippi State, and they see what we want to do and see how great our town is. And like, hey, I want to come here. And there are other people that come and say, you know what, it's just too small a place for me. I want to go do more things. You don't want to have the opportunity to go do, have more of an entertainment value in the city that I go to. Some people are big city kids, some people aren't. But, yeah, so we'd like to take another offensive lineman. I wouldn't rule out two, but I'm expecting one. I mean, I think if Chrysler wants to come, he can play right tackle and any of the guard positions. I think you take him. But you need a third tackle. And if that's not Zy, it's got to be somebody else. And kind of working through that. Now, the corner thing, corner recruiting's been interesting. It has been. Now, you go get Javon Williams very early. I think he's an inside guy, probably a two deeper. And then Dwight Lewis, we really don't know what we have there. You know, of course, he had over 60 schools reach out to him and over a dozen offered. He visited Arizona, Wisconsin, and Mississippi State. So you beat multiple Power 5 teams to get him. It's not like we beat Alabama A&M, you know, or Louisiana at Thibodeau, you know, with Nickel State. You know, we beat some legit teams to get Dwight Lewis. So it's not just us. That's one of those things that I always think about. You know, like I always believe in trusting your evaluation. And so when you get your evaluation, say, hey, I think this guy's legit, and then other people offer, it kind of validates your evaluation. And so Dwight Lewis is going to have to get acclimated to the speed of the game. This spring will be very important to him. But I don't think we have to go reach on a corner right now when you could probably find a two deeper in the portal in April. You're going to find at least the same caliber of players that are in the portal now, that are remaining in the portal, You're here a week before school starts, you know, really 5 days before school starts. You know, the pool has been largely drained. There's still a few things out there. But sometimes you got to go fish. Sometimes you got to punt. You don't have to approach it like it's a fourth and goal, do or die situation when you've got one more. Now, this is not like the edge scenario last year. You know, we identified last year on the traditional signing day that we needed to go get an edge. We go through the December portal, we don't get one, and we get into the spring, and we don't get one. Then we end up playing without one, and you saw the results on the field. That one decision probably cost us a game or two. A G5 guy would have been better than nothing, which is kind of what we played with. And I know we tried to kind of get creative with personnel, but we just did not have a natural pass rush. And we've addressed that this year. At least from a measurables and athleticism standpoint, maybe not so much from a production standpoint. And that's really what we're kind of banking on. At Mississippi State, here is what we're going to get out of the portal. We're going to get the ascending G5 guy. We're going to get the guy that has done it on a G5 level, like a Rayshon Thomas, like a Marcus Allen. Or we're going to get kind of the power four career reboot guy. You know, that's just who it is. You know, we're not going to be able to go out there right now with 2-10 and be able to go get a power four player that's filled out the box score. Those guys are going to be in high demand. So we're going to get the ascending G5 guy or the power four guy looking for a reboot, unless it's a guy that's got ties to the staff or ties to Mississippi. That's the reality of where we are. Now, for some reason, that concept has escaped a lot of people. They just, well, I don't understand. You're not trying to understand. It'd be one thing if we were a 10-2 team and we say, hey, look, we're a piece away, maybe two pieces away from getting to the playoff. And we believe you're that piece. But when you're having to revamp the entire roster, you can't make that pitch. It's like, hey, we're in a rebuild next year. Why don't you come be a part of that? You know, those guys that have, you know, competed at a high level are thinking, you know, I want to go chance to go to playoffs. I want to go compete for a NAFL championship. So, no, I'm not going to a 2-10 team. And I think some of our people are having a hard time accepting that. Guys, you got 48 members of this signing class. You got 85 scholarships. Not to mention you got Jamil Burrows coming in too. So we have basically flipped the roster. And I did the story the other day. We only have 17 scholarship players remaining from when the day Jeff Lebby got here. It's a brand new roster in 2 years. So we have flipped the roster. And we have spent a ton of money to do it. And so we've got to understand kind of the neighborhood in which we live and the situation that we're in. You're like, but Steve, you're just making excuses. I'm just stating the facts. We're a 2-10 team with a second-year coach in the most unforgiving league in all of college football. And people are like, well, why don't we just go outbid people? Well, you know, do you think there's an infinite number of resources? This isn't Amazon. And I'm going to shoot you straight here, too. Like the Marquise Gray situation, right? We've been on him since he went into the portal. And I've had good sourcing on that. Knew he was going to go into the portal before he did. Shared that on Gene's page. Said I expected State to be involved because one of the agents with one of the guys that has already signed with Mississippi State had kind of given me a tip that he was going to go in. And he goes, hey, I'd like to work this deal with Mississippi State too. I've enjoyed working with them. That staff there kind of shoots you straight, and I think my guy can go in there and play. And that's an important part of this thing too. Well, now all of a sudden, you know, Grace gets Georgia Tech, right? I think we should be able to beat Georgia Tech head-to-head. It's basically the same school, right? Now, they had a much better year than we had, but Georgia Tech doesn't scare me. Well, now Georgia's involved a little bit. They're talking about me bringing him in for a visit. I don't know if they do or if they don't. You know, over the course of this recruitment with Grace, I was told he was going to visit Ohio State. That didn't happen. I was told he was going to visit Clemson. That didn't happen. Now, all of a sudden, there's talk about him going to visit Georgia. I don't know if it's going to happen or not. But if it boils down between Mississippi State, Cincinnati, and Georgia Tech, I like our chances. If Georgia gets involved, then, yeah, it's a much different scenario. But people are like, hey, can't we outbid Georgia? Well, yeah, we can. But it's not, for a guy like him, Think about this for a second. Take our fandom out of the equation. We love Mississippi State, right? It's been our dream to play at Mississippi State. It's been our dream for our kids to go to Mississippi State. They become student athletes. We want them to be Bulldogs. But when you're somebody that doesn't have an allegiance to Mississippi State, and let's say you have the choice to pick between Mississippi State and Georgia, based on where the programs are right now, which school are you going to pick? Well, 9 out of 10 people are going to go, say, Georgia. I'm going to go to Georgia. You say, okay, well, we'll pay you $50,000 more a year to go to Mississippi State. And Kirby Smart says, you know what, hey, maybe we can't do that, but hey, if you come here, we can make you a millionaire. What are they going to pick? Be objective about this. If all things are equal, with the offer and the opportunity between two schools, who are they going to pick? Well, you're going to pick the team that probably gives you the greatest chance to go pro. Now, of course, David Turner's pulled out of guys in the pro. It's been a couple years. But you kind of understand that. We have to kind of take the maroon-colored glasses off. No player without an allegiance to Mississippi State is going to pick State over Georgia when the offer itself is just competitive. And like, even if we offered to pay them more, I think that's something you look at and say, hey, Georgia's in the playoffs and Georgia's won NAFL championships recently. Hey, you come in here, we've got a chance to go compete for a NAFL championship next year. Mississippi State's going to hope to get to the Liberty Bowl. That's not me being negative or being self-loathing. It's just the reality of things. And so what do you think a kid would pick? They're going to pick Georgia. 9 times out of 10, if not 99 times out of 100. There's going to be some guys that say, hey, I know if I go to Mississippi State, I'm going to play, right? I can look at that depth chart and look at that defensive line last year. I can get on the field there and play. If I go to Georgia, I may be a rotation guy, right? So there's that argument too. But you got to kind of understand where we are. And money's not everything. Oh, it's a big thing. Don't get me wrong, especially with these portal guys. But how much money would we have to overpay somebody to keep them from going to Georgia, where they have a chance to go over there and play for some major things and possibly put themselves in a scenario to get to the National Football League next year? That's a question you got to answer for yourself. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle if you're bringing a big group to town. And I would encourage you to do that. It's so much fun to have everybody under one roof. Rather than go out and get 5 or 6 hotel rooms, just book the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. You'll be glad you did. Full service kitchen, the wet bar, that huge back porch area, the fire pit area. So incredibly nice at the end of a day. Just sit out there as the sun goes down and just enjoy being around a fire and having some meaningful conversation with the people you love and respect the most. Whether you're bringing a work group to town or a friend group or perhaps your family, no better place to stay than the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. As I mentioned, 5, now 6 bedrooms, 2 baths. Going to have a new bath put in upstairs this year. Very incredible place to stay. I just think it's so nice to have everybody together. That way you can stay up late, right? You don't have to think, well, we got to drive home. No, we can just stay here. You know, and maybe you've had one or two, right? You think, hey, I want to be able to relax and enjoy my time with my friends or my family. You can do that and not have to worry about taking to the roads, perhaps in an inebriated state. Super cool, right? Now, Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page will come up and you can peruse all the amenities available to you and your guests. Also, some booking options are going to come up too. You can book through Airbnb. You can book through VRBO. I'm not picky. You can choose what you want. However, I can save you some money if you book through the Evolve website. Book through the Evolve website. Use promo code BSR10. That's BSR, the number 10. Gets you 10% off your stay through the Evolve website. So just by listening to the show, you're saving some money at the premier place to stay in the Golden Triangle. Be sure and check it out. Open midweek, weekend, everything. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. Be the leader within your family or friend group and plan that trip today. All right, the Mississippi State women back in action. It's been a tough start to SEC play. We expected that. May be a tough night again tomorrow. Thursday night, tip-off, 6:30 p.m. Now, Mississippi State officials are being weather aware. They are monitoring the situation very closely. Dr. Brown and the crew up there are just absolutely unparalleled in their expertise. The current expectation is the winter weather is going to arrive in our area around midnight. So we should be able to get the game in and then get you home without much trouble. But that's something to be considered. Now, I checked last night. There were no plans to change the game time, but you need to kind of be aware of that. If you're planning to attend, as of now, everything is on as scheduled. But as we get into tonight or into tomorrow, maybe check on that, okay? And we'll be watching for it, too. And if the university makes a decision, we'll certainly share that with you over on jeanspage.com and, of course, all of our socials. But number 10, Oklahoma, headed to Mississippi State. And so, again, right out of the gate, States gets all these difficult opponents right out of the gate. And listen, in our league, that's kind of the neighborhood in which we live, right? I mean, it's just part of the deal. When you play in a Southeastern Conference, you don't get weekends off, and at some point you're going to have to play the top half of the league. The Sooners, 13-2. They are 1-1 in Big 12 play, I guess SEC play now, pardon me. But a perfect 4-0 in true road games. 2-1 in neutral side games. So 6-1 away from Norman, the Lloyd Noble Center. But it's been a good year so far for them. They open up the year blasting Southern, and then they beat Power 5 Virginia there in Norman by 44 points. Legit. They blast Western Carolina. They beat Wichita State by 30. They beat UNLV by 30 in Las Vegas. 23-point winners over DePaul. They lose in overtime in Vegas to number 13 Duke by 10. They get Louisville by 6 at Louisville. They blast Alabama State. They get Oral Roberts by 40. They take on Michigan in one of those kind of made-for-TV deals, And they win by 10 over number 20 Michigan. They blast Omaha 111-65. They get New Mexico State by 18. And then they lose to Texas. What a way to open the SEC part of your schedule. To play a rivalry game in Norman, you lose by 7. Texas currently ranked number 5. And then they go to Thompson Bowling, and they upset Tennessee 87-86 over the weekend. So, again, a quality team coming in here. And, again, you look at the losses. I mean, just two losses, and that's to Duke and to Texas. Two bona fide programs. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. We have our work cut out for us tomorrow. So for those of you in a reasonable driving distance, we encourage you to turn out. If you can't make the game, you can view it on the ESPN app, courtesy of the SEC Network Plus. But we'd love for you to be here, certainly. It's going to be an interesting night. And again, Mississippi State's going to have to bring a really great effort to win this ball game. And how big would that be for the Bulldogs? Again, it's so tough. I mean, just right out of the gate in SEC play, I mean, you're playing teams that are ranked. Oklahoma averaging just over 90 points a game, allowing just right at 64. So they're outscoring their opponents by just over 26 points a game. Been pretty good from the field, 34%, but they're putting up a lot of shots, outshooting their competition by about 65 to 70 shots over the course of the game, of the year, pardon me. It'd be a record in a game. 33% from beyond the arc. So knocking down about 9 threes a game, only allowing about 6. They've been decent from the free throw line. Not great. Shooting just under 69%. That's nice. So making about 13. They're not really getting to the line a lot. But they're also not defending and fouling a lot. Only allowing right at 10.7 free throws made per game. It's going to be key for us. We got to get to the line, and we got to knock down those shots. Rebounding has been a huge strength of this team, pulling down right at 50 boards a game to 32, so a differential of 17.5. As a team, they've pulled down 749 boards and allowed just 487. Crazy. The assist, ridiculous. 22 a game, allowing 12. 339, so 150 more than their competition. They turned it over 285 times. They've cost 270. So 19 turnovers per game against 18. So it kind of works out, you know, works out about the same differential of minus one. Assist to turnover ratio is 1.2. Yeah, so interesting. 152 steals for them. They've allowed 139. 60 blocks, allowed 33. Kind of digging a little bit deeper inside the numbers here. Kind of looking at these individual statistics. Pretty balanced lineup here. Reagan Beers leads the flow with 17.1 points per game. Peyton Volhurst with 14.3. Sahara Williams with 10.4, and then Skylar Vann with 10.1. And then you've got a handful of players coming off the bench that averaging about 7 or 8. Now, Nevaeh Tott is your fifth starter, but has been, you know, not been as prolific a scorer as I guess some of the other starters, but all five starters have started all 15 games. Now, Tott is the 5'3 redshirt senior point guard from Columbus, Ohio, that you know, just kind of runs the operation for them. You wonder where all those assists come from. Well, you've got a veteran point guard like that. That's what makes all the difference. And so it's a very, very, very balanced team, and a team that's done some pretty big things against some very good opponents. It's going to be a tough night. We're going to have to go out there and play exceptionally well. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And you're kind of looking, you know, again, stability within the lineup there. I mean, how rare is it 15 games in that all five starters have started all 15 games? It's pretty crazy. Reagan Beers is a 6'4 center and, you know, kind of a wide-bodied center that eats up a lot of space and has been, you know, a really good rebounder for them. They run some offense through her. And so we're going to see a very challenging opponent. And we're going to have to play well in the post to make this a competitive game. And, again, I hate it for Sam because sometimes the schedule makers don't really – it doesn't seem like it's fair at times. But, you know, over the course of a full season, it all kind of balances itself out. You get a chance to play a lot of teams, and the ladies are 13-3. Of course, they've, you know, dropped two in a row due to SEC play, you know. And so you're kind of working through this again. You know, you knew what you had going to Kentucky, a team that may be a little bit better than their ranking. And, again, we've taken some good teams up there and come home with a loss. Then you get South Carolina, and then as a concession prize, you get number 10. And so State will face its first unranked opponent of the SEC slate on Sunday when we travel to Georgia. Then we go to Knoxville. It's brutal, man. It is. And then Ole Miss comes in on January 19th. And so we could conceivably be 0-5 in the SEC when the Rebels get here. Certainly. And that's something you got to think about. We talked about that at the beginning of the year. Felt really good about the men making the tournament. Weren't so sure about the ladies. And, again, some of that's a product of the schedule. But it's a new-look Bulldog team. And we got to hope for the best. And kind of looking at the SEC numbers here, again, it's just two games, you know, in league play so far. But you're kind of getting a snapshot, right? You know, there's some teams out there. Like on the men's side, you look at it and say, man, it's just absolutely such a bear, you know, in the league. It's a great year in the league on the men's side. I think the women's side is just kind of pretty much how it's been. You know, it's like when you know what to expect in this league, and you know there's going to be some teams out there on the women's side that aren't going to – the haves and the have-nots is a big gap between that, probably in women's basketball more so than the men. You know, the men, for the most part, this year, I think every game is going to be one of those games that you have to be absolutely on your P's and Q's. There are some games on the women's side that I think, you know, maybe you're able to kind of help yourself a little bit. We talked about how great the records were on the men's side. You know, on the women's side, LSU 17-0. These are your 2-0 teams. LSU, Alabama, Texas, South Carolina, and Kentucky. They've lost four games between those five teams. The 500 teams in a league in league play are Tennessee, Vandy, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, Florida, and A&M. And then, of course, once you get into that, it gets to be a little bit different. A&M is 8-6 this year overall. Missouri 0-2 in the league, 11-6 overall. Auburn 0-2 and 9-6 in the league. And you begin to wonder the Johnny Harris experience. You know, they did a good job last year, not out of the gate strong this year. Georgia, again, that's coming up on Sunday for us. It's an 0-2 Georgia team in the league with an 8-8 record. You feel like it's a chance for us to go over there and get a dub. And then Arkansas, 0-2 in the league and 7-10 overall, the only team in the league with a losing record through 17 games. So, again, there's some games to be won there, but we need some good things to happen. And I think once we get through this little stretch here, things will kind of even up a little bit. We'll start playing some of the lower half of the league, but it is a bear of a schedule right out of the gate. Absolutely no ifs, ands, or buts about it. All right, kind of previewing tomorrow. Again, your portal visitors, you know, we know Aiden Williams is coming in, and, Anthony Evans will finish up his visit. And you start thinking about, okay, could you get both of those guys? I think you can. I feel great about Aiden Williams, and I am cautiously optimistic about Evans. I almost called him Edwards again. I got revenge and nerds on my brain. But my thinking is, if you get those two, I think you've done exceptionally well at wide receiver. Now, some would argue, it's like, Steve, you've got a lot of guys with a lot of flash, had about a recruiting rankings, but you don't have a ton of production. I would remind you about last year. When you look at last year's portal class at wide receiver, we knew that Kevin Coleman was an incredibly highly recruited player out of high school, but his production through 2 years hadn't been great. It hadn't been. 326 yards, at Louisville on a winning team. But you look at last year, Trent Hudson was a kind of a late add. That didn't work out. He ends up redshirting, really made no contribution at all. You know what Kevin Coleman did? Kelly Akari, of course, was banged up a little bit. We certainly would love to have had him back. But, when you compare the fact that you took three guys out of the portal last year at wide receiver, one of them proved to be a star, one of them did nothing, and one of them was a little bit banged up but proved to be a very solid contributor. So, I think Bump's batting average there, it's 2 out of 3. I'm going to give him the nod on Kelly just because of the fact that, nobody could anticipate him getting injured. But I think some people forget, really the bulk of our recruiting class last year on the wide receiver side was the high school side. And then when you kind of break that down too, some of those guys are not here anymore, right? And so a lot of people try to say, hey, maybe the luster is off the Chad Bumpus experience. I don't agree with that at all. Mario Craver came in, and a lot of people don't realize this. Mario had trouble in high school, and then he came in here and had some off-the-field issues. Now he's headed to A&M. Wish him the best, except against us. We'll really be cheering hard for him against the rest of the league. But it was probably in his best interest and our best interest that he left. J.J. Harrell, of course, left, and I hate that, but I'm excited about San Francisco McGee. I'm excited about Stonka Burnside. I'm excited about Ricky Johnson. And so, we had a really good recruiting year last year, but the bulk of that did not come from the portal. It came from the high school ranks. And then you begin to think about what we have coming back and then what we have coming in. I think the wide receiver room could prove to be more dynamic this year than it was last year. I mean, the fact that Mario Craver is able to get on the field as a freshman, it's not just maybe a testament to his physical ability, but about the depth chart that we had coming back. And so when I began to work through all that stuff, I think, number one, as long as Jeff Lebby and Chad Bumpus are here working together as a tandem, that I'm not going to worry about the passing game, or as Jeff Lebby likes to call it, the throw game. I think the system itself helps us, and I think Kevin Coleman certainly benefited from that. He became an all-SEC receiver on a 2-10 team because of the offense in which he played and the fact that we chose to feed him. And so the decisions that we made in that respect, Kevin Coleman benefited. Of course, Kevin did the work. I mean, it was a collaborative effort. Jeff Lebby didn't make Kevin Coleman. Kevin Coleman had to go in here and do his job. But I think it's important to give our guys credit, Chad Bumpus and Jeff Lobby, for getting the most out of Kevin Coleman, the most that anybody's ever gotten out of Kevin Coleman. And now he'll be at Missouri, and we'll have to go up there and play him. But, you know, you begin to look at this, like Jordan Mosley, your second leading receiver from last year, is back. He's back. And then from there, you're kind of rebuilding the room. Because everybody else, Kevin Coleman transfers out. Kelly Akari exhausts his eligibility. Mario Craver transfers out. And so you're kind of having to rebuild the room. But that's the scenario we were in last year. And I think we can make an argument that the wide receiver group last year was our most talented group. So Bump gets credit for that. So I think you give him more tools to play with. You give him more of an opportunity, of course, to kind of figure some things out. And I think, again, being a product of the system certainly helps. And talking to these receivers, the thing they always talk about, they love Bump, they love his attitude, but they love the Jeff Lebby offense. They love the fact that Jeff Lebby has been successful offensively everywhere he's been. And this is really the first year that he's had a situation where he didn't really just elevate the offense. Now, we can go back and compare numbers on what we did in 23, but at the end of the day, we won two games. Right? And that's the stat, only stat that really matters. But you start thinking about adding Anthony Evans and Aiden Williams, the raw materials are there for this to be a very, very good group. Very, very, very good group. And I do feel very good about Aiden Williams, and again, cautiously optimistic about Evans. So we'll see how things kind of play out. I don't think you're going to have to wait long to get answers. I think by the end of the week, we'll have a good idea what's going to happen with both of them. And Marquise Grace is talking about announcing on Sunday. You know, so we'll see. We'll keep monitoring the situation. Again, I've had good contacts. They got a little bit quiet yesterday, and I did get some information today. Just traveling, you know. Just, you know, hey, we leave Mississippi State, immediately go get on a plane, go to Atlanta, go to Georgia Tech. As soon as we're getting there, we're touring facilities and taking dinner and that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, still having some positive dialogue, but the reality of it is the water gets a little bit deeper this time of year. But I think it's remarkable to see how this roster has evolved. And we talked about that at the beginning of this process. The 2025 season is going to be defined on what we do in December of 2024. You've gone out and gotten a four-star receiver, a quarterback. You've gone out and gotten Davin Booth to come back. You add Fluff Bothwell to it. What a strength that group, I think, can prove to be. I mean, you saw Xavier Gayton showed some flashes last year. Johnny Daniels, kind of a hard-nosed runner. You know, so we'll see. I mean, does everybody hang around through the spring portal? I don't know. But the offensive skill position pieces are there. You know what Blake Shapen is, and you know you feel like, hey, we know that Blake can be a good quarterback in this league. You know, we've gone out and committed some scholarship spots. We do bring back Albert Reese and Luke Work, and we've got some pieces returning that we can work with. Adding some more pieces in the portal. We went out and I think we recruited, you know, some guys, some big body guys that can come in from the junior college ranks and help us. But I really think that's really going to be the key to this whole team is what the offensive line proves to be. I think the defensive line, just by getting bigger and stronger, if we can just be average defensively, I think we've got a really good chance to, you know, to put some wins on the board. You know, it's that simple. I think we've improved the wide receiver room. People say, but Steve, we haven't replaced Kevin Coleman. This time last year, you didn't know much about KC. And I've got faith in Jeff Lebby that he'll find somebody else to kind of replace that production. It may not come from one guy. The running back room is better. I don't know that we could say the tight end room is better, but I think it's going to be as good. You know, Seydou with another year under his belt, I think Seydou will be in a good position to do some things. So, you know, we got Phil Oldholt now in to coach this offensive line and kind of get that group up to speed. And if he can, I think this offense can be pretty good. I really do. All right, if you hadn't done so, go to DutyNobleBook.com. You can order The Dude and all my sports titles there along with When the Bottom Falls and come float with us over at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. You'll be glad you did. Whether you've got chronic anxiety or chronic pain or just need a break, we may be able to help you. Dial 662-268-7601. Set up your appointment today. You can just go by and take a tour when you're in town. And you can take part of our discount program, too, and get multiple floats monthly at a discounted rate. I think once you float, you're going to want to come back, and you want to come back regularly. We have several student-athletes and members of our faculty that are weekly floaters. Yeah, so maybe that works well for you too. And come be part of us over at jeanspage.com, the greatest Mississippi State site that's ever existed. There's a reason we've been around as long as we have, doing bigger and better than ever. It's having a great year. And I hope that you guys are having a great year. We're a week into this thing, but it's going to be what we make it, no doubt about it. So we're going to work hard and do our best to provide you with the best coverage that Mississippi State fans deserve and what you've always expected from us at jeanspage.com. Let's get out of here. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.